This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, August 5th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. President Biden won Arizona in 2020 by a margin of about 10,500 votes, helped out considerably by the voters of Maricopa County, which is the most populous in the state and increasingly blue. Arizona is a target of former President Trump, who persists in complaining with no factual basis about widespread voter fraud during the election. Four audits of the ballots in Maricopa County were conducted, all upholding Biden's victory. Nevertheless, conservative donors are funding yet another audit run by the Florida-based firm Cyber Ninjas, which has completed a hand count of the ballots. The state Senate is claiming that the Cyber Ninjas also require access to computer routers and internal county logs in order to finish their work, a request that the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors has rejected. Jack Sellers, a Republican and board chairman, wrote in a letter to the state Senate this week, "It is now August of 2021. The election of November 2020 is over. If you haven't figured out that the election in Maricopa County was free, fair, and accurate yet, I'm not sure you ever will." Bill Gates, a Republican member of the Board of Supervisors, has spoken just as sharply about the futility of the work of the Cyber Ninjas.
"We have complied over and over again. We have not obstructed this. It's time for them to issue a report."
He went on,
"This is simply political theater. Their effort is crumbling."
Jane Mayer, The New Yorker's chief Washington correspondent, joins me to discuss this long-running drama in Arizona and how wealthy conservative groups are stoking mistrust in the electoral system and engaging in voter suppression efforts across the country. Hi, Jane. Thank you for joining me. I know it's a busy week.
Great to be with you, Dorothy.
You've been writing for years about the influence of dark money on American politics, and this week you reported on how that money is funding the big lie, which is Trump's accusation that the 2020 election was stolen. Remind us what happened in Arizona during the election. You know, if the ramifications weren't so serious, it would be hard to take these shenanigans seriously. As I recall, they began with something nicknamed Sharpiegate.
That's right. The election took place on November 3rd, along with the other states in this country. And by midnight of that night, there were already wild rumors that fraud had taken place in the election, because a couple voters went online claiming that they had been given Sharpie pens, which had bled through their ballots and disqualified them. And they suggested that this was some kind of attempt to sabotage Trump voters. And that was the beginning of kind of lighting the fuse for what became this insane situation out in Arizona.
You went out to witness the Cyber Ninjas doing their counting, I think it was in June, at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Phoenix. Describe that scene.
I mean, it was kind of otherworldly. There's this huge coliseum, and it's completely empty. All the bleachers are empty, except for the scene down on the floor, where there are people marching around like ants, carrying boxes and boxes of American ballots from the presidential election months and months before. They're putting some under microscopes where they're squinting, looking to see if there are bamboo fibers, because there's a rumor, kind of a conspiracy theory, that maybe there was Asian sabotage of some sort, and they've got fake Asian ballots with bamboo fibers in them. There are other people looking at the folds at the ballots to see whether they were properly folded, because if they're not, they're going to claim that they weren't really sent in envelopes as mail-in ballots. And then there are table after table that are sort of like big lazy Susans, with three people sitting at them, each counting a pile of ballots independently and checking to see if they come to the same numbers.
So the Cyber Ninjas have acknowledged receiving almost $6 million in private donations, most of it from nonprofit groups outside Arizona. What organizations are involved?
Well, these are organizations that were set up for this purpose by allies of former President Trump. So you've got people like Sidney Powell, the sort of conspiracy-minded lawyer, and Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor who had all those legal problems, who's a diehard Trump supporter. And there are a few others that are kind of interesting fringe players. There's a man named Patrick Byrne, who is the founder of Overstock.com. He's made, you know, many, many millions of dollars, so he's got money to burn, so to speak. And they have funded most of this audit. So it looks like it's an Arizona thing, but in fact, it's funded by out-of-state money and kind of extreme fringe elements who are keeping this thing afloat.
Including, you know, major organizations. So Leonard Leo, the chairman of the Federalist Society, is known for his very successful decades-long campaign to fill courts with conservative judges. How is he involved in efforts to impose new restrictions on voting?
Well, so this is what I found. I went out to Arizona trying to figure out, you know, what is going on. This is a completely unprecedented attack on American elections and fundamentals of American democracy to challenge a presidential election and say that it wasn't fair when there seems to be no evidence of that. And what I was trying to figure out is, how did this get this far? And what I found out was, beyond the audit itself, the audit is not taking place in a vacuum. It's taking place in a belief system that has been spread by very powerful conservative groups, the belief that supposedly there is rampant fraud in American elections, and that you could really believe that something like this could happen, that there would be a, you know, a fraud that would end a fair election in Arizona. And it's a myth of election fraud and voter fraud being perpetuated and promoted by very powerful groups on the right, some of which I've written about before. As you mentioned, Leonard Leo has one such group that he's very closely tied into that's called the Honest Elections Project, and it popped up in 2020. It's actually a new name for an old group that he had called the Judicial Education Project. And there are many of the other sort of familiar players on the right, some of whom have not before been involved in voting and election issues. But I think if you look closely at this, what you see is they're exploiting it. They see an opening here. It's something that's juicing the conservative base. And it is also something that's very useful, because what it's doing is it is providing an excuse for state legislatures that are run by Republican majorities to crack down on voting practices and make it harder for the people who are the Democratic voters to vote.
Tell us, too, about the Bradley Foundation. What is it?
Well, so I go out to Arizona and I start sort of turning over the rocks to try to figure out what the money flow is. And as I was looking at it, what just sort of hit me in the face was I'm looking at all of these different nonprofit groups. You know, there's about a dozen of them that are across the country are involved in what they call election integrity issues or voter integrity issues. And they're all militating against vote fraud, which doesn't actually really exist in any big way in America. And I'm looking at all these groups, and I start going through their paperwork, their tax filings and things. And what you find, almost all of them are being funded by one particular source, and that is the Bradley Foundation, the Lined and Harry Bradley Foundation, which is based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's a old line, right-wing, conservative, nonprofit, if you family foundation that has a tremendous amount of money in its kitty. It's got about $850 million, gives away about $50 million a year, and it is involved in funding this whole kind of adventure in challenging elections across this country.
And who is Cleta Mitchell?
So Cleta Mitchell, she is an election lawyer. She is a director of the Bradley Foundation. And she has, in particular, been kind of the dynamo that has pushed this issue. She's been doing this really for about 10 years at least, since at least the 2012 election, which is when she joined the board of the Bradley Foundation. She's litigated in cases claiming that there was voter fraud. So they have created a good part of this environment that has allowed what's been called the fraudit, the audit out there in Arizona, that looks like it's a bunch of fringe people on their own, kind of kooky people just acting in Arizona. In fact, I would argue they've gotten a lot of support politically from these big national, well-funded groups.
And she's someone who, as you say, should not be underestimated. Didn't she play a role in Trump's threatening phone call with Georgia election officials?
She did. In fact, I would bet that most people in this country had never heard of Cleta Mitchell before until, I guess it was about January 3rd, when news broke of this just extraordinary conversation. It was a phone call that former president, at the time President Trump, had with Georgia election officials. It was a conference call, and Cleta Mitchell was another person, a lawyer, on this call. And what were they doing? President Trump was berating election officials in Georgia, demanding that they come up with, you know, something like over 11,000 votes that would have swung the outcome of Georgia's election to him. It seemed to be kind of a rogue operation to overturn a United States election. And there was Cleta Mitchell on the phone call. Mark Meadows, Trump's chief of staff at the time, had sent her down there. And she was helping Trump in this process.
And interestingly, she was more than happy to talk to you.
Well, I mean, I don't know how happy she was.
Well, she was open. She was pretty open.
She was pretty open. I mean, so what happened after she was exposed being on this call, her law firm, which is a Milwaukee-based firm, Foley & Lardner, said it was very concerned, and they have parted ways since. But she felt that she had been unfairly treated, and she defended her role, and she went on at quite some length and shared her thinking about all of this with me, which I was really glad to have, because I think she argues, and I would agree, that our readers need to understand what people like her think, because they are a force in American politics.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
So 49 states are under pressure to change how ballots are cast and counted. And in the past 6 months, 18 have passed new voting laws, including Florida, Georgia, and Arizona. You spoke to a number of people who, regardless of party affiliation, seemed exceptionally worried about the impact of these changes. One of them, Katie Hobbs, Arizona's Democratic Secretary of State, said that she's gotten death threats and that these groups, as she put it, are laying the groundwork to steal the 2024 elections.
Well, that is really what people are worried about. An awful lot of the ones that I've interviewed said this is not just about 2020, and this is not just a sort of a kooky thing to try to overturn the last election. It's laying the groundwork so that future elections maybe could be challenged. It's spreading distrust in the American public about the outcome of future elections. And I think the thing that has been most unnerving to a number of election law experts like Rick Hazen, who I spoke with, is that we're not just looking at now laws being passed to crack down on voting rights. It's not just about things like early voting and same-day registration and those kinds of mechanics. What's really worrying Rick Hazen in particular is what he calls election subversion, that there is now a movement on the right to try to put in place laws and officials who might challenge the outcome of an election and throw it to state legislatures where they could step in and decide how the electors should vote themselves.
And is that where the independent legislature doctrine comes in, something I had never heard of before, which could be exploited to undermine the electoral process?
Yes. So people will remember that without maybe knowing the formal name of the doctrine, what happened in the last election was a desperate attempt by Trump and his inner circle of supporters to stop the certification of the Electoral College's vote. that was going to certify Biden's win. There was this effort to stop it. That's what January 6th and the ransacking of the Capitol was about, and to interrupt the certification and, instead of having Congress follow through on it, challenge the election as having been too riddled with irregularities to count, and instead send it back to the state legislatures. People will remember maybe that a lot of the state legislatures in this country are controlled by Republicans at this point. So this was really a power grab. They were hoping to throw this election back to Republican state legislatures, where the outcome, who knows, could have been possibly different. And that process is something that did not just end in 2020. There is a sort of a legal movement on the right to try to get state legislatures to take back the power to appoint the electors in presidential elections. It is in the Constitution. It is their power to decide on how the electors are appointed. And for over 100 years in this country, that's been decided by the popular vote, because we have a democracy. So voters get to decide who to pick as president. But if the state legislatures could pass the laws that would give them the power, there's a possibility that they can take back that power and appoint the electors themselves. And there's now a move afoot to do that. There was a move afoot to try to do that in Arizona.
You had a remarkable conversation with Bill Gates, the Republican member of the County Board of Supervisors we heard at the top. Not so long ago, he was a steadfast Republican. Now he's persona non grata in the National Party, and he too has received death threats for calling the fraud elections untrue. Tell us a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he is the kind of person that our democracy depends upon. He's not well known. He's just a local official who's overseeing elections. He's something of an expert in election law. He studied law at Harvard Law School on a scholarship after getting a big national scholarship. And he thinks of himself as a Reagan Republican and a serious conservative. Yet what he's facing now in Maricopa County, where he's on the Board of Supervisors, is an onslaught from his own party, people claiming that the election that he oversaw was riddled with fraud. He knows it wasn't. He was an eyewitness to it, and he knows that this is untrue. And he's trying to stand up to this, basically a mob in his own party. And for doing so, he's been intimidated. He's been called a traitor. He's had to move out of his house with his family and flee to a bed and breakfast at some point. And he even had a visit from the local Republican National Committee official, who came to him and basically told him to shut up.
You talked a little bit about what you learned when you started reporting out in Arizona. You knew a lot, as we've mentioned, about how some of the country's most high-profile conservatives put their money to use. What surprised you as you worked on this piece?
Well, I really was surprised at how centralized the money flow is in this. And so much of it is coming from one foundation, the Bradley Foundation in Milwaukee. And I'd say even more surprising is if you take a look at who's on the board of the Bradley Foundation. I mean, these are not kooky know-nothings. There's some very prominent and successful people on that board who, you know, if you talk to Bill Gates, the Maricopa County supervisor, he would, as he says in the story, they know better. And so, for instance, you've got on that board Robert George, a Princeton professor who is quite prominent as a conservative political philosopher. He's a conservative Catholic thinker. And he's written pieces, actually, saying that, you know, he's glad that Mike Pence stood up to Trump and did not overthrow the certification of the last election. He obviously doesn't think that the last election was stolen. Yet there he is on the board of the Bradley Foundation, which is funding groups that are pushing the idea that American elections are not secure, that voter fraud is everywhere. And even some of these groups, like the Public Interest Legal Foundation, it's one of the groups funded by the Bradley Foundation, has a number of people on its board who literally are connected in to Trump and the January 6th uprising. There's one person in particular who actually spoke at the January 6th rally and urged the crowd to stop the certification of the election. So there's a connection between these prominent people on the Bradley Foundation board and the money that flows down into these groups that are really radical.
Is there the possibility of overreach? The one little ray of hope in your piece comes at the end where Gates tells you that he thinks that all of this might backfire.
Yeah, I think he may be right. I mean, and if you look at Arizona, and this is something that is really reassuring, in order to win statewide in Arizona at this point, either party, Democrat or Republican, needs to win the centrist voters who are independents. They need to carry them along with them. When you look at the polling in Arizona, what's happening is that the audit there is wildly popular with the far right base of the Republican Party there, but it's completely alienating the centrists, the independents. And so as a long-term strategy, I think it's kind of a dead end. And that's what Bill Gates thinks, too.
And are there countervailing efforts by legal and other groups strong enough to ensure that these conservative groups don't get what they're going after, groups that could ensure voter access and integrity?
I mean, there are plenty of groups on the liberal and left and progressive side, whatever you want to call it, that are working on voting rights. And there are now a number of law professors, two of whom I interviewed in this piece, who are warning, take a look, watch out for what's happening in these state legislatures. So there is sort of a growing awareness of the threat that what we've seen in 2020 in Arizona and 2021 with this audit could be a dry run for 2022 or for 2024. So, I mean, as awareness grows, I assume people will try to counteract it.
Thanks so much, Jane. I'm sure this is just the beginning of our conversations on the subject.
Thanks so much, Dorothy. It's great to be with you.
Jane Mayer is the New Yorker's chief Washington correspondent. Her books include Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Michelle Moses and Kylie Warner for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.